It's my pleasure to be speaking to Liz Parrish, CEO of BioViva Science. Liz is setting up a fascinating, interesting company. The 100-Year Life, my book with Linda Grattan, was about the social science of longevity, how we as a society need to adapt to more time. And that was predicated on the notion that if we extrapolate past trends of life expectancy, most of the generation being born today have a realistic chance of living to 100. But there's a lot of pioneering work going on in science, looking at aging and understanding why we age more. And that literature suggests we may see even more dramatic increases in longevity. And Liz's company is aiming to be behind that movement and starting to offer medical treatments to exploit that. So, Liz, I think it's fascinating what you're doing, both from a science point of view, although I'm an economist, not a scientist, but also from the economic point of view, because I think there's clearly going to be a burgeoning amount of health investment and a growing industry in this area. So perhaps you can just tell me a little bit more about how you got into this area and a little bit about the science behind it in a very accessible and short way.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I do think that this is one of the biggest booms in both sides of the economy, both investment and return, and actually investment and return in the average person's life. So I got involved in trying to increase health span when my son became ill and was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I was thrown into the hospital environment with a lot of kids who were not as lucky as he was. They didn't have treatable diseases, and I essentially found out that they didn't have access to the type of therapeutics that I had hoped for. I had been volunteering my time for a couple of years working with a nonprofit for stem cell research and education. And I wanted to increase the access of translational medicine to patients to help them get well and stay well longer. And I ran into something called longevity sciences, and that's the sciences of keeping people healthy longer, and realized that through genetic modification and the use of stem cells, that we could not only get these kids well, but help everyone live healthier and longer.
So that's quite an extraordinary ambition. And of course, we hear much about dietary, we hear about exercise and sort of living and purpose. But this is really something deep in the genes, in particular this notion of telomeres and their length. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I mean, one of the great model organisms to work with aging is mice, because mice don't live very long. It's kind of hard to do longevity studies on humans because they live so long. So if you want to put things into perspective, if you have a wild mouse would live about 6 to 8 months in the wild. But if you took that mouse and you took it into a laboratory environment and you put it on calorie restriction, basically a perfect diet for a mouse, and you exercise it, you would increase its lifespan by 26 to 30 months. So that's pretty incredible. But if you modify one gene in a mouse, you get 60 months without the calorie restriction or the exercise. So this is the type of power that we're looking at with gene modification.
Okay. And there are, of course, a lot of interest in this. So perhaps you can tell me a bit more about what's happening at the moment in the bioengineering market in terms of, you know, who's out there and the amount of investor interest that you're coming across.
Right. So there's a big movement right now in cell and gene technology. Between 2015 and 2016, trials increased by about 21%. A massive influx of investment is going into the field in both manufacturing and clinical outcomes. BioViva is going into manufacturing and clinic outcome in a medical tourism model. So we're really excited about this. We have a lot of people that have signed up who want to be patients for our clinics offshores, and we're kind of a new model of how medical tourism can make money now by doing the right thing, by bringing therapies that are safe enough for patients, especially who are already diagnosed with untreatable diseases, and finding out how well these treatments work and if we can get these people healthy, and then chasing biomarkers of biological aging seeing if we can, therefore, without looking at massive lifespans, pinpoint how long these patients might live with these interventions.
So one of the most extraordinary things, of course, about this story is your, you know, yourself. You're obviously committed to this, both financially, but also personally, because you, I believe, are sort of patient zero for the treatments that you're promoting.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we launched the company in 2015, I went ahead and took our first dual gene therapy to treat combat biological aging to show that it was safe and effective. And this was a pretty big move. It got a lot of press, but the point of it was to show that we're sitting on technology that needs to be translated to humans now. That the old technology has kind of been pushed to its bandwidth, antibiotics and immunization being the two big innovations that really helped us expand lifespan and health span. And that now it's time to work with these much more powerful but much more simplistic drugs.
And what were the treatments you had done?
So I took a myostatin inhibitor. This is a gene therapy that increases your muscle mass and strength. It had worked in all animal models, including primates, and had passed safety and efficacy in humans for muscular dystrophy. The second one was a telomerase inducer. So a little bit of telomere biology. So telomeres are at the ends, they're the caps at the ends of your chromosomes. And as your cells divide, they get shorter and shorter. There's something called the Hayflick limit in all species, and it's basically the limit to how many times your cells divide. It's not really the limit of the length of your telomeres. Some animals, like mice, have a very limited cell division, but they have really long telomeres, and some other animals, like sea urchins, might have really short telomeres, but have a massive amount of cell division. But nonetheless, they are correlated to each other in a bit of a correlating bandwidth to each species. So when we increase the length of telomeres in an animal, let's say a human cell, we create almost unlimited cell division. So it's pretty interesting technology and something worth looking into.
And of course, Liz Blackburn and others get the Nobel Prize for work on this and finding the links that you just discussed. I mean, what I know is obviously stunning. As you said earlier, we work on mice, but the human lifespan, even currently, is so long, we don't really have the scope to do experiments in this area. And obviously, this therefore holds back in terms of regulation and in the US, the FDA's attitude. So, you know, how did you feel personally taking this treatment?
I felt great about taking it. We had studied it for about 2 years. Our scientific advisors were some of the most prominent people in the field of understanding of these technologies. And I really felt like a safe bet. It turned out to be so. You know, the outcome of my blood work is actually quite fantastic. But you're right, we have to track down the biomarkers of biological aging. So everyone biologically ages at a different rate. But what we need to do is pin down biomarkers so that we can understand how much more lifespan you have left, even if you're only 40 or 50 or 60. So these biomarkers will be a very critical point of treating biological aging in the future, but we shouldn't not try now. We certainly should throw everything at it that we have now whilst we develop these biomarkers, because these two, I would say, tests would be quite intricately linked to one another.
And what is the medical establishment's response being to you doing this? I mean, this is, I imagine, extremely controversial.
Well, actually, we've had a really good response. Initially, we had a bit of a rough response from some groups who thought that it was actually quite a risky endeavor. But once we sat with it, many of those people started contacting us and actually praising us for doing it. Over 110,000 people die of biological aging every day. Actually, I mean, this would be one of the biggest atrocities against humankind if we have a treatment for biological aging and we're not using it. That's about 40 million people every year. If this was something like Ebola, this would be a huge outrage.
But what is the regulatory response going to be? Because, you know, obviously you're trying to make this a commercial activity, but I imagine the regulatory response is going to be very slow.
Well, you know, it depends on where you go. So there are areas that you can do consensual, what's considered experimental medicine, in different places of the world. And many of these zones are where even some of the largest pharmaceutical companies do their offshore trials. So about 43% of clinical trials are run offshore anyway. They're run under the FDA. You can or don't have to do that. So, you know, we need to get a profile of safety and efficacy on each one of these treatments, but it's not too soon to do that. And I think that even risk-averse sort of environments are very pro to us moving forward at this point. We've gotten a lot of support internally.
And since you started by Aviva, what's been the sort of scientific developments? I mean, this seems an area where things are changing quite dramatically. So I wondered what you thought had changed since you started and where you see things developing in the years to come.
Well, you know, we have our research and development, and we're sitting on quite a few patentable technologies, and we continue to watch new technologies as they come out and become popular in more of a mainstream of longevity sciences. And I think some of the exciting therapies to come out most recently is obviously killing senescent cells, something that we don't want to kill all of the cells in the body, but targeting some senescent cells, especially in cancer. Immunotherapy and gene therapy has come quite far. I was just reading in the news today that the FDA is going to pass one of the cancer immunotherapies. This would be, I believe, the U.S.'s first gene therapy. To get regulatory backing in a big way. And that's very, very exciting. And then, of course, we continue to look for more of the treatments against biological aging that will hit some of the hallmarks of biological aging that telomerase induction may not, and myostatin inhibition will not help with. And so we continue our search for those.
And how do you see the, I assume this is a retail market and obviously probably mostly high-income individuals at the moment, is that right?
Well, yeah, gene therapy is really expensive. We're working with high-net-worth individuals to help pay forward their good fortune, to help get other people through trials. We are bound to areas that either are less expensive to run trials in, and of course these trials will be run at a very high standard, or trials places where people can do paid for clinical trials. But we are trying to encourage people to pay for their good fortune to help patients that are sick get access to these treatments.
And how quickly will we start to get reliable information back from the trials as to whether things are working? I mean, you talked about the biomarkers, but what is the sort of the feasible length of time you think before we know that this is really delivering?
Well, you know, the great thing about gene therapy is that you can get some sort of glimpse within the first 6 months what's happening, sometimes within the first couple months. And then it's something that we're going to continue to watch over time. It's a much more powerful treatment than anything we've seen in the past. And when we talk about experimental medicine, we have to remember that everything that's ever come through even the highest regulatory standards is still an experiment. And almost all of those drugs that you die taking. We believe that these will be the most powerful indicators of increased lifespan in short order that we've seen because we're working directly with the very genes that create young cells in dish or have reversed biological aging in animal models.
And how do you see the sector actually developing as an industry? I mean, I assume it will begin, first of all, high-end retail, but then is the expectation it will start to become much more widely spread and adopted by the hospitals and the medical institutions?
Yeah, absolutely. The idea is to get good medicine out to people. We have a lot of different ways of working through the high price of gene therapies. For instance, we're looking at targeting organs right now, being organ specific. Maybe when a patient's had a heart attack or kidney failure or something like that, we can actually see if these specific gene therapies work just locally. And this will help us amass the data. And if the data looks as good as it has looked in research, then the hope is to get these into countries, get regular approvals going on in a multitude of loans, and get the price down on the therapies as soon as possible.
But for the time being, of course, it's going to be very much one where the individual has to seek out these opportunities rather than them being rather obviously available.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that a lot of people do come to our company just for that. Some have ailing parents or grandparents. Some have ailing children. People are really good at finding companies who are innovating, trying to give people an actual option outside of death. This is probably how the market will burgeon. Medical tourism is a tremendous opportunity for both investors and patients, because it gives you the opportunity to get a treatment for less money than you might otherwise have gotten it for, or get a treatment that you couldn't get in a clinical trial yet.
And I said earlier on that we've seen this sort of growing life expectancy. Do you feel that these innovations and developments you're talking about have the potential to accelerate that life expectancy? We know the oldest person ever to live was 122. I wonder what your own thinking about whether there is a limit to human lifespan.
Well, when we look at things like telomerase induction, so you can put cells in a plate and you can see that, you know, they'll divide maybe, you know, 50, 55 times for a human. You can put telomerase in them and they start to create healthy divisions that are almost unlimited. This is a type of technology that we would like to see express directly to lifespan and health span. So we don't want to make people who are older longer. We don't want you to be old longer. We want to create youthful bodies that are young longer. And so what we need to do is we need to get these technologies in people. We need to bust that cap, bust that lifespan cap, and then we can have the next conversation.
Okay, that sounds a good place to end, Liz. Thank you very much, and all the best in what is an extraordinary personal investment in this area. So thank you for talking to me, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks then.